Sometimes it's hard to be in this world, to feel the things I feel. Sometimes it's hard to know where the light has gone. Sometimes it's hard to see in this world the cruelty and the pain. Sometimes I just despair of what we have become. And then I see somebody hold another in their pain. I watch the love repair the broken pieces of their shame. Suddenly the world turns inside out.
Om Shanti. Good morning. I know that the first time that I came to Mount Abu, I was about 17, and it was 1966, and we just had that original complex where I think you visited Pandapavan, but even that was much smaller and more basic, very, very simple. But I hadn't been expecting what I experienced, and it was a little bit like some of you were saying yesterday, a taste of paradise on earth. And I hadn't expected the reaction I would have when I would leave the gates of Mount Abu Pandapavan. And by the time we got to the bottom of the mountain, and I saw the traffic and all the wonderful things that go on down there, I was in tears. I thought I've left heaven and come to hell. And that night, I cried myself to sleep. So I hope that doesn't happen to you. But I can imagine that you're preparing to leave, not just packing your bags, but also thinking about what you're taking away and what you're going to do with what you have taken away. And a very simple image is that of a battery, and a battery that's been charged. And then the battery gets used, but it needs recharging regularly, maybe even every day. And so every day, a chance to reflect, a chance for silence, a chance even to travel in your mind to the top of the mountain and recapture some of the experiences and the memories and emerge that feeling and experiences that you've had here. But something to be done every single day is just connecting, and through that, the recharging of the inner battery. And one of the names we use for God, not just here, but east and west, everywhere, is this term, the Almighty Authority. And it gives you that feeling of God's power, but we don't always understand what all that's about. And we wonder, well, what is God's authority? What is God's power? And last night I was asked a question about this. Well, where does God fit in within drama and karma? And so I'll just take 1 minute to put that into context, that karma and drama are interconnected, yes, but God's power is the power to be able to give us an understanding of who we are and what we need to do. God's power is the power that's able to cleanse and purify us, so that then we go through our transformation with the power of God's love and come to our original state of purity again. So the three are definitely intertwined. Me and the drama and God's rule. But on another level, the power that God's able to give us is something that we can experience on a daily basis and use very much in our life in a practical way. And we've described 8 different powers, but there can be many, many more, and you can keep adding to the list for yourself. But if I take you through that list of 8 different powers and how they apply in our life, it'll give you an idea that the power isn't power over anyone else. Well, that's clear. But it's an inner power that enhances my ability to do things in the way that I need to, in the right way. Out there, people talk a lot about increasing capacity, and I'm sure they have many definitions of that. But I truly think that as I take God's power for myself personally, I truly am increasing my capacity. And I don't need anybody else to help me do that, but I just need to connect, and that power comes. So, first power, and you might not even normally think of it as a specific power, but it is a very special power that actually allows us to develop all the other aspects of spiritual power. And that is the ability to turn inwards. And just reflect for a moment, and you'll see how most times we're looking out there. But not only are we looking out there, we're also actually just reacting to things out there. It's not often that we're actually creating our own inner responses in a unique way. We're simply going through a pattern of reaction. Something happens, there's a reaction. And sometimes it's even predictable. You know that if you say this to somebody, you've pushed the button, you know the response you're going to get, the reaction you're going to get. You also know yourself that this person is going to touch this particular subject with me, and that's it. And I'm trying to tell myself, stay calm, Om Shanti, Om Shanti, but it doesn't seem to work, and the same reaction comes out. So all of this is part of the way in which we've lived our life so far, and that is connected with the external identity and my reactions to external stimuli. And the change that happens with spiritual power, I begin to turn inwards and am able to see what's happening in here, and I'm able to see the thought and to know whether I want to let myself carry on thinking that way, or whether I decide, no, I need to have a change. And so another mantra to add to your list of mantras that you're going to carry away is think before you think. And that happens when you turn inwards. What happens is if my thoughts go rushing ahead, then my reaction and responses are going to be as usual. But if I take a moment, a thought comes, and I ask myself the question, am I dealing with things from inside out, or is it that the outside is dictating still? And so the mantra of inside out is very important. You know, when you're in a boat, you don't want the water to come in, but you're in the boat, and yes, it's meant to be in the water, but the water's outside, it's not meant to be inside. So I'm in the world, very much in the world, engaged in everything as usual. But now the difference is, instead of the outside world penetrating inside, what I would like to happen is what's happening inside, and the qualities, the values that I carry within myself should be expressed outside. Not outside in, but inside out. And so we use this term introspection or introversion, and it doesn't imply action if I just say introspection. It implies sitting quietly, which is fine, but it also actually to be aware of inside and let it reflect outside in my activity is also part of turning inwards. And most times when we use the word introverted, we don't usually mean it as a compliment. We feel that people are antisocial and they don't want to engage, they don't want to communicate. But in fact, this whole idea of being comfortable with myself inside, and then starting from there and then doing whatever it is I need to do. So in a simple way, as I speak, am I here? And then I speak. I look. Am I here? And then I look. And so on and so on. This leads to that state of mastery over my physical senses, which also then means mastery over my actions, my words, total sovereignty over the self, which is a very powerful way to be, so that truly I am in charge of me. And so this first step of spiritual power, turning inwards and taking charge, and of course taking charge of my words and actions is one thing, but you get to the point of taking charge over your feelings and emotions also, and even your habits. So all that happens through this change, the power to turn inside, and then that introversion, and then coming outside. The second application of this inner spiritual power, where I come to the point where I'm looking and seeing what's useful, what isn't useful. I've been walking along carrying a huge amount of baggage, and so I feel heavy in life. I am not so light, not so easy. Everything is a little bit tedious, but I'd like to get rid of this burden that I'm carrying. And it's a burden that's self-imposed. Nobody asked me to carry it, but I chose to do it without realizing I was making a choice. But today, I can see that I'm carrying the past with myself in a big, big way. It's important to learn from the past, so I'm not saying throw out everything, but having learned the lessons I needed to learn, then at this moment now, am I ready to put away the past? Say, it's done, it's finished, I don't need to hang on to it. And if I try it, even for a moment, can I put a full stop to the past? The instant experience of lightness and freedom is so beautiful that it's an incentive to keep moving in that direction and not picking up all the baggage again, which is what we are prone to doing. We are so accustomed to carrying that load that at first we think, well, how are we going to manage without it? But we actually don't need it. And when I let go and I can feel that sense of freedom and I say, this is what I want, then I'll keep leaving it behind and not carrying it with myself. And so the power to be able to pack up and not let my mind travel again and again to past situations and incidents and carry the sorrow that I experienced at that time and bring it up again. Every time I remember the incidents that caused me pain, the sorrow today is as intense as it was 20 years ago, 10 years ago, yesterday, whatever it is that happened. And so to liberate myself from sorrow, I need to be able to finish the past. But it's the power that comes through meditation, through the link with the Almighty, that gives me the strength to do that. I think without that power, we maybe have tried many times to declutter, to remove the things of the past, but they keep coming in again and again. And then they create a comfort niche and I continue to stay in that. But no, to make that decision, finish. I don't want it anymore. So that I now have space to be fresh and clear and clean in my understanding, my perception, and my responses. Otherwise, the past is always, always going to color me. And there's no space for anything new or creative to happen at this moment. And then we wonder why we're stuck. But finish, and there's space. And also, the future, it'll be fine. As long as what I'm doing today is good, I don't need to think about it. The seeds of today will create my future for tomorrow. And so clear that space so that then I have that time and energy to look and see what it is I'd really like to do. The third aspect, you laugh when you hear this, tolerance. Do we have tolerance? Well, research tells us that our tolerance capacity has been decreasing all the time over the last several years. And it's research. Our tolerance capacity is less today than it was 10 years ago, less today than it was 5 years ago. And you can actually blame it on all the chemicals. And what I mean by that is that World Wildlife Fund was doing research into chemicals and the impact on organisms. And they discovered that every organism under the sun, right from the North Pole down to the Antarctica, every organism, birds and fishes and humans, you name it, we all have over 550 chemicals in our system that should not be there. It's causing havoc in many different ways. All our systems, our respiratory system, our immune system, oh, you know, all the health issues that seem to be multiplying, the infections that come, the viruses that come, all of these things. But in particular, I'm thinking about the impact on our nervous system. And what they've understood is that our capacity for tolerance has been greatly reduced because of these chemicals. But we can't blame it all on the chemicals. There's other factors at work too. And we can't deal with the chemicals instantly. No matter how hard you try, you can go organic, you can do what you want, but the air that you breathe, all of that. So tolerance capacity has been impacted. Memory, so it's not just age, it's also the chemicals. That's been impacted. And thirdly, our ability to concentrate. If you looked at children today and wondered why they are not able to concentrate, well, that's one of the reasons. But it's not just children, it's all of us too. Our concentration capacity has decreased over the years. But so that's a little aside. But if I choose, can I increase my concentration? Yes, meditation. Can I increase my capacity to tolerate? Yes. The power that I draw from the divine is able to extend my capacity. So whether it's to be able to tolerate other people, circumstances, or even physical pain, the power of tolerance definitely increases through this connection. There's an interesting image that's being used to describe this. A child throws stones at a tree that's laden with fruit, and the tree returns fruit to the child. It doesn't throw the stone back, it gives fruits. And so as I experience love and peace through my meditation, whatever the outside stimulus may be, my response is going to be one of peace and love. And many, many stories about the reality of what I've observed within the Dadis, the stories I've heard about Brahma Baba, in terms of capacity to tolerate and the return being given only of love, only of peace and nothing else but. I remember at one point in the days that everybody still just used landlines for phone calls, and Wadi's here and she'll remember the little room which was maybe 3/4 of the size of this patch of carpet, and that was the sitting room where Daddy spent 18 hours a day doing service in the first place we had as our centre in London. And she was on the phone, somebody had called, and they were very irate, and it was a monologue. It wasn't a dialogue, it was a monologue. And I was sitting on a chair just across, and I could hear, I didn't know what he was saying, but I could hear the sound of his voice getting louder and louder and more angry. And from Daddy's face, he would not have been able to tell anything. And Daddy was just saying. In Hindi they say ji. Yes, very beautiful, polite way of saying yes, ji, ji. Agreeing, agreeing. And at the end of all of that, she just said, okay, Om Shanti. She put the phone down and the person was getting irate because somebody had taken too much time at the center and they wanted them back in their home. And so that was the cause of the irritation and anger. But obviously it was a lot of pent-up stuff that was coming out. And at the end of all of that, Daddy said to this person, here's a box of Toli. I want you to take this back home for him. And Daddy then said, I want him to forget what he has said. I can forget what he has said because there was no reason, no call. But I don't want him to remember it and feel guilty. I want him to forget it also. And so, not just concerned that I shouldn't hold it in my mind, but concerned that this person shouldn't have any sorrow and hold it in his mind. So, the power of tolerance. Today the things we're facing are minor. Maybe a traffic jam, maybe someone's late, maybe something's a bit inconvenient. But climate change is here. It's not coming, it's here. And maybe the things we're going to have to face are going to need a huge, big heart and generosity of spirit to be able to tolerate whatever it is nature throws at us. We've violated nature, we've aggressed nature, we've exploited nature. The return is coming back. We've upset the whole balance of nature. And so the extremities of climate that we're experiencing, Europe was, I was traveling a lot in different countries in Europe, and everywhere was brown. There was very little green anywhere. England, normally you see a lot of green. You saw brown. Germany, it was brown. The list is endless. But the heat, we've never experienced such continuous heat for 3 months, maybe longer. Climate change. But what they're saying is that it didn't just happen this year. It's probably the scenario that we can expect in future years also. You know all the details and the examples, but am I going to be able to cope with all of this? Will I be able to tolerate and still maintain my inner cool, my inner peace, so that it doesn't shake me and disturb me? And sometimes riots happen more easily in heat than in the cold. Is my mind going to be able to cope with it? And am I going to be able to cope with all the amazing things that human beings do? Is temperature rise going to impact my own nature and make me hot again? Or am I able to be cool? So the capacity for tolerance and being able to develop that capacity is maybe one of the most important things that we need to be aware of. How do I increase my resilience and come back to my state of normality, even if I'm stretched, but to be able to tolerate it and return back to my own normal state of being peaceful. Another word that's very close to this, very similar but a little bit different. And in toleration, it's not a question of gritting my teeth and saying, I've got to do this, but to be able to do it with love, with peace. But even a step beyond that, the power to adjust and accommodate. something's happened, and I don't even have to try and accommodate it. I don't even have to try and adjust with it, but I'm able to deal with it. I'm able to merge it so that it doesn't stay uppermost in my mind and create feelings that are not useful, feelings that are not healthy later on. And so can I truly accommodate it inside myself, within myself, so that there's no trace left of it. And I think we're going to have to learn to deal with situations more and more by increasing our capacity of accommodation, adjustment and tolerance. Maybe you're already thinking, I've got a lot to do. There's so much that I'm dealing with now. But I think that before we get to a better world, things are going to get worse before they get better. It's not to scare you, but it's just looking at the scenario of how things are going. And so it's good to be prepared. If I'm prepared, I've got my umbrella, then if it rains, it's fine. I'm not going to be bothered. If I've put the lagging on the pipes before the winter comes, I'm prepared. I'll be okay. So the inner powers that we can develop today through that connection with the Divine are powers that we need now, but more and more so, I think, in immediate times to come. Another power, and I find this one very, very important here and now today, and that is my capacity to discern. Am I able to see clearly below the surface? Think about a false diamond and a real diamond, and how you need an eyepiece to be able to tell which one is which, because externally they both look the same. How do I know which is valuable and which is fake? Keeping my inner eye of wisdom open, my spiritual awareness, my spiritual consciousness, then I don't just see the surface, whether it's in people or situations, but I'm able to see deeper than that. Somebody's nature might be a bit strong, but maybe they have a golden heart. So am I going to be put off by the external of the roughness of the way in which they speak? Am I able to see the reality of the goodness of their heart? Maybe it's the other way. Maybe outside it seems very sweet and inside intentions maybe not so honorable. Am I able to perceive that also? And so people, circumstances, on one level it seems to be one thing, but let me see things with the soul, the eye of wisdom. And if I keep my mind clear of waste and negativity, the clarity of my mind is that much greater, and so I'm more open to understanding what signals are coming to me. And so it's not mystical, it's not magical, it's very practical, pragmatic. Keeping your mind clear means you are able to perceive things. Preconditioning, prejudgment, all of that stuff, let me clear it out. And then I can understand and be able to discern more clearly than I would have otherwise. And if my discernment is on track, then my power to decide what action do I need to take, what steps are needed now at this moment, today, tomorrow, long term, again, I'm able to understand that more clearly and make my decision based on that. It's not always logic that works. And with all the uncertainties that go on today, where it's difficult for anyone to do future scenarios, even 6 months ahead, can you predict what's going to be happening in 6 months' time, either with politics or with the economy or with nature, the environment, climate? Who knows? So I can't just use logic and left brain thinking. I have to be able to have intuition. I have to be able to catch signals and be sure that it's not my own mind that's speaking to me and telling me something, because my deep desire is for something else. And so my decision is being pulled in that direction and I don't even realize it. So the two things that veer me off track in terms of decision making are desires and attachments. You know, remember those old-fashioned pair of scales that they used to have in the grocery stores? They used to weigh the cheese and the butter and all sorts of those things. Maybe you're not as old as me, so you don't remember. I remember. And so those old-fashioned scales. And the center point had to be center. If the pointer was in one way or the other deflected, then the reading wouldn't be the right one. And so what is it that deflects the pointer? My attachments, for sure. My this one, that one, the other one. My possessions, this thing, that thing, the other thing. My idea. My position, there's a lot there, the whole world. And so can I be detached and come back to center point? But also my desires, I want. And where there's discontent and want, my judgment, my decision is not going to be accurate. And how do I get rid of desires? The attachments, the process of detach, soul, consciousness, and the connection with God. But also, as I experience that fulfillment in my relationship with the Divine, and I can feel that love, that joy, and I know that everything that I need, everything that I want is available from one. Really, truly. I don't need to go searching here and there and everywhere. I'm not needy anymore. There can be some very powerful people in the world, but yet they're still very needy. It sounds a paradox, but it happens. So external power, external riches, external authority, and there's still a neediness in the soul. But that neediness can't be fulfilled by more money, more status, more this, more that, or anything. The only way to actually feel that fulfillment is through that connection. And then when I can say, yes, there's really nothing that I want. I've got everything. There's nothing that I need. I've got more than I need. Then in that state of contentment and happiness, there's total clarity in my decision, my judgment, but also in my ability to be able to give to others in a very genuine way without demand or expectation of a return. Many of you have commented on the way you see selfless service. whether they're doing cooking or serving or cleaning or driving, gardening, whatever. But that comes because there's that contentment and a desire to give something in return to others. So important, the state of contentment, both to be able to serve, but at this point just thinking about my ability to make decisions. I don't know anyone who would say, I'm fine, yes, I'm very content with my ability to make decisions, and not wanted to be able to enhance it further, especially as things become more and more uncertain and unclear. But this way, yes, the decisions I make now, I'm going to be comfortable with 6 months later, a year later, maybe longer. Another aspect, the power to be able to face situations. Do I have the capacity to be able to face whatever it is that may come my way? Do I have that inner guarantee for myself? Or are there things that I think I'm going to be fine, and then I see a little spider and I scream? So little things shake us. Maybe not spiders, maybe people, whatever. But as I practice this awareness of soul, and I really experience that state of being beyond all the limits of time and distance, so a situation as big as death, the soul has the guarantee, I'm eternal, I'm immortal. This will perish, the soul will not. There's a beyond, something beyond. Whether it's the death of this body, or whether it's the death of the ego, which is bigger. Probably the death of the ego is bigger, because I'm having to deal with it very consciously. When death comes, whether I've come to terms with it or not, it's going to come and take me away. But the death of the ego, I have to learn to face it. Am I going to be nil, nothing after that? No. Firstly, the understanding. I understand that, in fact, what I will have discovered is my real identity. And the qualities that are there within the soul that make me valuable. Maybe I'll really discover, with the death of the ego, my new birth as a child of God. The statement, unless ye be reborn as a child of God, cannot enter the kingdom of heaven. So the same idea in all spiritual paths. The death of the ego, so that I can have new birth, eternal life. So the capacity to be able to face anything, whatever it may be, and yet still remain very clear, very strong. The last one that I want to touch on, and again, absolutely what is needed in the world. What you see most times is conflict, whether in a little way in a home, in a family, or at work, or the bigger picture of nations, or within a nation, communities, and there's a lot of conflict everywhere. What would be a different paradigm? Is it possible to shift from conflict and even go beyond competition and come to the state of cooperation? If you see the issues, the critical issues that the world is facing today, it's not resolved through conflict, it's definitely not resolved through competition, but the only way we can deal with the situations is actually cooperation. but it seems to be a long way to go in that direction. So first let me start with myself and start from home. And why cooperation is so challenging is because there's ego. And so one ego and another ego, how do you cooperate? It's fine if I'm the boss and I'm in charge, but is it possible to say you're my boss when you aren't really? We're supposed to be working together. So who told you you're my boss? I didn't accept that you're my boss. And so the need to work in teams, people are recognizing that out there. And so the theory is out there that you need to work together, but the practice of soul consciousness, but also of seeing the speciality of each one, being able to see the goodness that's there in every single human being. And when I see that, then I can see value in working with them. Respect for them, regard for them, yes, of course. But also, why should I cooperate? If I know everything and I can do everything, well fine, let me get on with it. And everybody will do their own thing. And we'll all be stuck in our little patches doing our own thing here and there, and nothing much is going to happen. But if I can see value in you and value in working together, then I'm going to be ready to cooperate together. And there's value in every human being. There's no human being who does not have value. I just have to learn to look for the speciality and value that speciality, and then I can work with them. And so cooperation only happens when we're willing to let go of ego and when we're willing to see goodness in everyone around. And so when we learn to do that, and it's actually, in a sense, the last step out of all the other powers. If I've learned to develop all the other powers, then cooperation becomes a possibility. And one is the skill of being able to give my cooperation to others. But the other is equally challenging, to be able to receive cooperation. Again, my ego tells me, I don't need somebody's help, I can do it myself. It's everywhere, a universal issue. Even children, and you very often see conflict and competition rather than cooperation. So the culture has taught them this, whether it's television or parents or school or whatever. But cooperation, it's natural, it's sustainable, it's effective, and it's going to be the only way that we can move forward. And so let me do the inner work I need to do to finish the ego and then be able to see goodness in all and work with each one. And the task of transformation of the world is too big for anyone. No one individual, no one country, no one race, no one anything can make it happen. But it's the personal connection and then the connection with the whole human family. People talk about oneness sometimes, but oneness isn't that we all have the same idea. Oneness is where we're able to share our ideas and work together and see the value in each one's idea. So cooperation means that truly we can think about creating a better world together. There's enough talent, enough skill, skill, enough resources, enough, everything to really transform the world and make it a better place. Except that we just need to drop our egos. When you're ready to do that, it'll happen very easily. So in a very practical way, you can see where, especially now, at this time of transformation in the world, we need spiritual power to deal with everything. And the next phase of humanity will then be a natural state of cooperation. Today it's a state of consciously making an effort to make it happen, but the future is one in which it will be very natural and easy. The give and take will not be one of bondage or pressure, but the give and take will be a natural flow of energies in which all can live together happily and comfortably. Let's spend a few minutes in silence, and I'll speak out my own thoughts as we meditate. And after that, if there are a few questions and comments, we'll have a few minutes for that. Sitting quietly, I come to the awareness of my spiritual identity. I can feel the connection with the Divine. While I was busy, I couldn't feel this presence. But now, in this quiet space, I can see clearly. What is useful and what is not. And I choose to hold only the things that are useful and nothing else. Get in touch with the inner being, the peace, the love. And as I feel this, I find myself in the presence of the Divine, and from the Source, and I know that this power is the power that I need for my life, here and now. I take this power from the Divine. My heart seems to open. God's power of love is able to reach human hearts. God's light and God's love reaches not only me as souls sitting here, but this light and love extends and this light and love transforms the world.